Daft on Draft, and we have a Daft or Draft today for you guys. I would like to also apologize for kicking you guys out really quickly in the last episode, but we talked so much about Cam Ward that we ran a little bit late. We're actually doing a topic today that we were going to do yesterday in the review of the Alabama-Georgia game, which what a wacky football game that ended up being. You know, Alabama came out and absolutely obliterated Georgia in the first half. And a lot of weird stuff happened to get Georgia back in that game, kind of. But Alabama, outstanding game for them. And we are going to talk today about Jalen Milroe. And we might have a little bit of a hot take when it comes to Milroe and the NFL. But we're going to start somewhere else. This class, and Jim Nagy tweeted it out, said he was talking to scouts. Usually there's like mid-teens when it comes to first-round grades. Good draft classes, there's about 20. And then this year, maybe there's 10, he's saying. Or the scouts are saying. Mm-hmm. And everybody is piling on this, saying, I'm seeing the same thing. I'm hearing the same thing. This is not a very good draft class.
No.
Running backs don't matter. But NFL passing is way down. Running is really efficient so far this year. Mm-hmm. Is, first of all, I think Ashton GT is absolutely going to be a top 15 pick at this point. If he keeps anything up like what he's doing right now, he will be a top 15 pick.
Yeah.
But the daft or draft here is that Ashton GT should be a top 10 pick in the 2025 NFL draft class.
I'm going to draft it. I'm going to draft it. Football is a cyclical sport. Football is a very cyclical sport. And I don't think he's an AP level prospect, an Adrian Peterson level prospect, but Adrian Peterson went sixth or eighth. I can't remember, one of those two to the Vikings back then. Bijan Robinson, and he doesn't do as much out of the backfield as a receiver as Bijan Robinson. And that's why I'm a little bit hesitant, is he doesn't do a lot out of the backfield in the passing game. But I don't think that matters in the way the NFL is trending back. If teams want to sit back and too high, if teams want to sit in big nickel, if teams want to sit in nickel against base offenses, then like, this is the repercussion of that. So I don't think it matters. And especially there's some teams picking in the top 10 that like might be on the verge of still being in the case where they could get a luxury pick. And again, some of these teams currently slated to pick the top 10 aren't going to, like the Cincinnati Bengals aren't going to pick the top 10. They're sitting fourth overall now. If Cincinnati's picking in the top 10, there's a good chance they could pick Ashton GT. They're starting Zach Moss right now and Chase Brown. And again, they're kind of struggling with paying both of their wide receivers, so they might have some other pressing needs, but like, they just drafted Amarius Mims. I think Orlando Brown is playing well enough where they can go ahead and probably kick another extension to him if they wanted to. So offensive line is what we always preached about the Bengals. They never addressed the offensive line, and they finally have. So like, if they can figure out their wide receiver situation with T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, they're in a position where they could take a luxury pick, 100%. And I think Janty would be a great fit there. The Tennessee Titans, they don't have an offensive. I mean, I think the Titans lack way too many priority positions, though, to make a move like that. Like, if my Cleveland Browns can figure out their offensive line, like, Kevin Stefanski wants to run the football. Nick Chubb is 30 and coming off of an ACL injury. If that's the identity that he wants to go back to after this shit show that has been whatever they've been trying to do with Deshaun Watson and Ken Dorsey and that the aerial assault, that like that could be a fit. Carolina Panthers, you can't tell me Dave Canales wouldn't want Ashton Jansen. And again, they just drafted Jonathan Brooks, but Jonathan Brooks is also coming off of an ACL injury. So there are some teams up there that I think could do it. The New York Giants just lost Saquon Barkley. If there's no quarterback that they feel comfortable taking, and John Mara is honestly that broken up about losing Saquon Barkley as it seemed he was in Hard Knocks, like there are a lot of fits in the top 10 for Ashton Jansen.
Yeah.
But again, the question is, he deserves to, and yes, he deserves to. So I'm 100% drafting that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to draft this. This offensive class specifically. Like, wide receivers are there, but you're going to be able to find wide receivers. There's two guys at the top. I don't think that the level that we have seen other wide receivers in previous years. They're good players, but I don't think that they are the true blue chip wide receivers that we are kind of used to seeing at this point. And then there is a decent amount of depth at wide receiver. I think that there's some decent depth at running back as well, but we're looking at a guy who, on top of being able to seemingly break every single tackle that happens, he also hit 21.2 miles an hour this past week. And the one question that I really had about G&T coming into the year was, does he have the breakaways? But well, he proved that he is. We have data on that now. And so, yes, I think that it absolutely pains me. And I threw my running backs don't matter shirt away the other day. Tossed it. They matter again. It is what it is. I tossed the shirt. I love this football player. Mm-hmm. Loved him coming in. He's a muscle hamster. He's everything that I ever wanted in a running back. Yes, he deserves to go top 10 in this class. And I think that he deserves to be the first offensive player taken.
I don't think that's a super hot take. Again, a quarterback is probably going to be the first offensive player taken because that's the world that we live in. But it's a bad
quarterback class. God, I hope not.
I hope not as well. But it's a bad quarterback class.
Yeah.
Maybe Chris Williams or Kelvin Banks, but like the LSU guys are both kind of like,
yeah,
at this point.
I think you're looking at Luther Burden or Tet.
I think so too. As
the only real options, in my opinion.
I think so too. Unless you consider Travis Hunter a wide receiver, who I think is well deserving to be the first overall pick this year.
But I
don't disagree with that at all. Don't disagree with that at all.
All right. Yeah. Screw analytics. Yeah. We're all team running back here now. It is cyclical, even my opinions on the running back position. The second one that we have here is, do we want to wait on Beck and let's wait on Beck and Milrow?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to finish out with that.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Corey, what was the second one?
Because this is actually something I don't think we're very far off of NIL is coming through. Now that NIL is happening and players are already getting paid, I don't think we're super far off from this. But after draft, players less than 3 years removed from high school should be allowed to declare for the NFL draft if they submit an application to the advisory board and get back first round feedback from the advisory board. So again, we're watching in college football right now. Ryan Williams.
Stipulations are here. We have real stipulations.
There are real stipulations. And again, there is an advisory board. This is what true juniors do, right? They submit their paperwork to the advisory board. Sometimes the advisory board said, you're probably looking at a third round pick and they'll say, I'm going back to school. Whatever. I want to try to be a first round pick. If an underclassman, Ryan Williams, Jeremiah Smith are the two obvious guys. Like, there is not a hole in Jeremiah Smith's game, and he is 18 years old. He is Julio Jones at Alabama as a true freshman. Like, that's who he is as a player right now. There's not a hole in his game, and he's 18 years old. He would get a first-round advisory grade. Like, if he said, tomorrow, I want my paperwork, I'm going to take my paperwork down there, and I'm going to have see what they say. If a true freshman or a true sophomore submits that paperwork to the advisory board and they get first-round feedback, they should be able to enter the NFL draft.
Draft. I'm going to draft it. I believe that they should, if they get first round feedback, and this goes for Dylan Raiola as well. I think, you know, when we look at this class, the three best NFL draft prospects might all be freshmen, either true or redshirt freshmen. Yeah. So it is, I do believe that. And it's a little bit weird because I think if there was a true developmental league, that would make me feel even better about this, because I do wonder about, you know, an 18-year-old body development playing at the NFL level against real grown men, because you do need to really build your body up to be able to handle, first of all, a 17-game and probably soon an 18-game schedule in the NFL, and to take that beating from professional 30-year-olds. And so it does give me a little bit of pause, but I that's why I like the stipulation of you have to be a first round grade. You have to have been given a first round grade from the NFL draft advisory board. So we are talking about the freaks of the freaks. We are talking about, and obviously Derrick Henry wasn't a first round pick. He ended up being a second round pick, but Derrick Henry was a grown man at 19 years old. So the 6'3", 250-pound running back who made Mark Ingram look like a normal human being when he was standing at
a Heisman Trophy winner, yeah.
you can let that guy go pro. But obviously, yes, with the first round grade from the advisory board, absolutely, I'm taking this one draft.
I'm going to draft it too. And again, I legitimately don't think we're far off from this. Like, if I'm thinking back, Derrick Henry's a good one. I think Nick Chubb pre-ACL injury as a true freshman is another guy. Especially these running backs, man. These running backs have a short shelf.
Well, with running backs specifically, and that's another thing. Like, I wonder if, because we're not going to change the collective bargaining agreement for running backs to allow them to really cash in on their rookie contracts. That's not going to happen. So, yeah, I wonder if a running back gets, because they probably won't really get a first round grade most often, but like if there's a way for even just, I mean, they couldn't just do running backs, but if there was a way to give more running backs the option to take that next step early because their window is so short at the NFL level.
Yeah. It kind of gets a little sticky to legislate.
Yeah.
For sure. If you try to do positional by positional, but I honestly don't think we're far off from this. I don't think we're far off from this, especially with NIL. The guys are getting paid already. Again, yeah. The body development thing is the huge kicker here. But again, Jeremiah Smith is 6'3" and 200 pounds. Like, the kid is bigger than every defensive back he's going against. He's the best wide receiver at Ohio State that is known for having dominant wide receivers. Like, it's bizarre stuff. So yeah, I don't think we're far off from this. But I think that's probably all we need to spend on. I'm trying to think of another guy. Like, maybe Brock Bowers would have even, like, I mean, even at Georgia his freshman year, like, people were talking about this kid. So, like, I don't know. There are some players out there, and you might have to look at fringe positions to get there, but there are definitely some dudes out there that would apply for this.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It wouldn't be, like, a rampant thing.
It would be
maybe a guy a year.
Yeah, we're talking about, we're going over the past 10 years, and we're struggling to find a name. So this would be, yeah. Yep. Like Julio Jones, again, yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Would have been the same case. But yeah, I'm buying it for sure. Draft it.
So now we're getting into the meat and potatoes of this episode, because this is going to take a while, I think. Daft or draft, at this point in the process, Jalen Milroe is a more attractive NFL quarterback prospect than Carson Beck is.
I mean, I think that's an easy draft for me right now. And we talked about this a little bit off air about like summer scouting, and what you're supposed to do in summer scouting is you're supposed to bank on the tools and then hope the development's there. And if they're not, then whatever, it's summer scouting. There's nothing you're losing out by having a high grade on a guy who doesn't pan out that has really high tools. Right. So like, how did we fall in love with a guy who, I mean, he's got I think we even thought his arm was a bit stronger than it is. And it's not like even on his deep balls in this Alabama game, I thought he was torquing his whole body to get the ball. Torquing his whole body to get the ball down the field. I'm struggling to figure out like, how did we, I think we thought again, he had a high IQ as a quarterback and his floor was so high that like, you can't miss on this guy. His floor has been extremely low the past two games,
mm-hmm.
like in the basement low his past two mm-hmm. games, to the point now it's like, well, if he doesn't have the tools and his floor is that low, why would you even take this guy in the first 2 days of the draft is kind of where I'm sitting at. And that might be a little bit of reaction. That might be way too far reactionary. But like, I mean, if we're talking about a guy who could spot start games, like I'm not taking that guy in the third round. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing out of Carson Beck right now. And that's not to say that I think Jalen Milroe is a spectacular quarterback prospect, because I think there are a lot of shortcomings that we can definitely discuss ad nauseum in this podcast, because we have a lot of time today to do that. But we're talking about literally, maybe outside of Ryan Williams, the fastest guy on Bama's team. Nick Saban said on the broadcast of that game that Jalen Milroe was the fastest player on his team last year. So like, and on that touchdown run he had up the right sideline, I think it was the second touchdown run, he's literally breaking angles of backside defensive backs trying to chase him down from backside. He's breaking angles from frontside defenders as well. Like, this guy probably runs a low 4.4, high 4.3. And then he has a nice cannon. He's got it. He can generate some RPMs in the football. Dalton and I,
I needed to bring up real quick, because this is something we haven't talked about.
Yeah,
the RPMs are there.
They're live
with his football. It is live.
It's a good base. I noticed he threw opposite hash like an 8-yard like stick route, and I was like, does he really have that much arm strength. But then I saw his base and was like, oh, his feet are cockeyed.
And I need to point out, this wasn't just even just a Georgia defensive back who's pretty good. This isn't somebody who, yeah, he's a five-star, obviously, he goes to Georgia. No, this is somebody who people were talking about as an infallible safety prospect that he just absolutely out-angled in Malachi Starks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Starks was on the outside on this play, playing corner, which he's been playing a lot of corner. Have you, like, noticed? Yeah. He's been playing a lot of that. So he was on the outside, and he literally just got ran past by Jalen Milroe. And Jalen Milroe is not a small human being.
No, either. He is dense. He is
dense. He's not Jalen Hurts dense, but he's also more explosive than Jalen Hurts is. There was another run where it was triple option with, it wasn't a pitch option, but it was the triple option with the little toss out to the wide receiver screen. And he faked out the screen. And then when he decided he was going downhill, it was like he was shot out of a freaking cannon. Mm-hmm. This dude legitimately could play running back at the next level with that explosiveness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think he is a quarterback. And I think that we are seeing the type of exponential growth with him. Because mm-hmm. we saw gradual growth with Jalen Hurts during his career at Alabama. It was slow. But every year he got a little bit more like a quarterback. Now, at the NFL level, things have not gone as well recently with him, but it was always there and it was always trending upwards. The new offense came in this year and he is operating that offense at a level that you would like that offense to be operated. He is getting the ball out quicker. He is making the right decisions. He was given answers to the test against George's blitzes. And he simply wrote the answers down just the way he should. There was one play that I really saw where there was a wide receiver in the slot with space against a six-man rush, and he turned around, and he didn't get the ball right away, and he should have gotten the ball right away. But Jalen Milroe swung right to the outside and hit a pass with some little A anticipation to the guy on the right sideline because he had the leverage out there too. So it was still a decent play. It wasn't the play that he should have made. It wasn't replacing the blitzer, but it was still a plus play overall. But there were very, very many good decisions in this game, and decisions sometimes where his process was sped up.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times we saw last year when the process was sped up, it's try to make a play outside of structure, because at the end of the day, he's running a 4-3 or a low 4-4. But he is really, really trying to be a professional passer at this point. And I got to give him credit for that. We'll get to some of the downsides here in a second with him as
But that's what really stood out to me as well, is like the tempo of his eyes, the tempo and pace of which his eyes are getting 1 to 2 to 3 to 1 to 2 to check or 1 to hot.
He's moving them.
He is moving his eyes extremely well. And again, I think Kalen DeBoer is helping him out a lot. A lot of those twos or hots are swings or sticks or things like that. But like, he's getting there and he's hitting them, and that's what you want your quarterback to do. Again, we talk a lot about like, well, he doesn't play. Like, it was especially the case like last year with like Jaden Daniels and Drake May. Like, they don't play in NFL offenses. That's okay as long as they're passing the test that they're given. Like, if they can prove they can pass the test they're given, what makes you think they can't pass that test at the NFL when they're given a new test? Like,
yes, and let's go back a year further to Hendon Hooker. Hendon Hooker played in his offense, and Hobel's offense is, there's nothing that resembles an NFL offense there. But he ran that offense in a way that would give you confidence that he could figure it out at the NFL level. Then Joe Milton came in, and you realize, like, somebody with far superior physical tools in that offense and still couldn't really get it. Yeah. He still went seventh round because he can throw the ball 100 yards, but that's it. I mean, you need to pass the test that you are given.
Yep.
And that's all that somebody like these guys can do.
Yep. Again, talking a little bit about some room for improvement. I am still hesitant because
I'm not going to beat around the bush here. His deep ball is terrible. His
deep ball's not great, man.
It's terrible. And I'm going to bring this back anecdotally real quick. He throws the deep ball like I threw the deep ball growing up because I could not mechanically push the ball aerially. It needed everything I did. It needed to be flat. Flat, more on a line. And I could push the ball downfield when I threw it on a line. Mm-hmm. Any air underneath it, and the ball just didn't leave my hands well. And every single throw from Milroe is flat, and far too often, it's coming back inside and leading back into danger. Mm-hmm. Even his big plays that were caught in this game mm-hmm. were passes that were poorly leveraged down the field. And a lot of this has to do with his upper body mechanics, which we will talk a little bit about as well, because they need improvement. He's got a really quick release, and it helps him out a lot on these quick passes, getting the ball out quickly. But it really kind of hurts him down the field, intermediate and deep.
Yeah, he's got a very stiff arm, I think is the way to like the way I define it. Like, it's like a steel rod. Like a steel rod, you can still swing really fast. Like a baseball bat. You can swing a baseball bat really fast.
Think of Cam Ward and all of the angles he can throw at. The flexibility of his arm, you don't get that.
You don't.
Get that with Milroe.
Very linear. Yeah, his arm is always very linear. Not a lot of off-platform stuff, which is fine. Like, again, I would love my quarterback to operate in structure and get your eyes where they need to be in, which is what Milroe is doing. And again, when you are a 4-3 athlete, maybe you don't need the arm angles because you can create windows with your legs to throw with anyway. Well, so, I mean, I give him a little bit of benefit of that there, but the deep ball thing is really concerning. That first drive, that huge one down the sideline, was leveraged right back into the safeties area. And like his wide receiver tracked it well, but had to run from the boundary over back over top of the numbers to track and catch that football. The Ryan Williams play to win that game is 90% Ryan Williams. That ball is not only behind him, but on his inside hip. Where he has to not only twist to find the football, but like 360 turn to get that thing. Cause it's on his front hip instead of his boundary hip, his inside hip instead of his outside hip. And so there are some things, like, even if the intention was that's a back shoulder throw, then it's still on his front shoulder.
Yeah.
So like, there are some really big leverage issues with his deep ball. And again, I've charted all of his games now. I got some time to knock that out this weekend. In the South Florida game in particular, he's 0-for-5 on throws 25 yards or deeper. And I'm charting on target. I'm not charting where they caught or not. I'm charting on target. Against Georgia, 1-for-3. And they were all three caught, but 1-for-3 on target in that game. So would like to see some improvement there. But again, I don't think he could have had a bigger test than he just had. And he aced it in terms of his process and where he needs to go with the football and his internal timer. And his internal timer went to know, like, it's time to pack it up and go, or it's time to get the ball out. I thought he was spectacular.
And then when all hell breaks loose,
good luck.
He can take it 70 yards on the ground with his legs.
Yeah.
Like that's the Jaden Daniels trump card as well. Mm-hmm. The difference is, first of all, he's not trying to get himself killed every time he runs the football like Jaden Daniels did.
Yeah.
And he doesn't weigh 175 pounds. Obviously, yeah. Daniels is heavier than that now. And it's hyperbolic because he was like 175 pounds when he was a freshman at Arizona State, but Milroe he's got that NFL frame to deal with that. And he does a good job. Something that Jalen Hurts did a really good job of as well is trying to like avoid the big hit. And so if Milroe knows like it's just not happening and it's a lower leverage situation, first down, and it's a zone read and he's trying to get to the outside, well, he'll kind of just go down. He'll still take a little bit of a shot, but he's going down. There was one play early where it was towards the end zone and he tried to run somebody over on the right side. And like, that's a situation where, because you're going for the end zone, I understand it, but I would like you to understand the situation there. It's tough when you smell the end zone, but I do like overall that he does try to limit the hits a little bit. He's not as good as Kyler Murray is, because nobody is as good as Kyler Murray is doing that. But Milroe, first of all, he needs to sequence a little bit better, get the lower half moving with his eyes a little bit better. But like we said, those eyes are moving at a level that you want to see from a potential NFL quarterback. And that is something that we did not see from him in the past. And so that sort of linear growth, not only do we like that, it is showing that this is a guy who is willing and able to improve. And then just the floor, first of all, and the ceiling are both higher than Carson Beck, who I didn't really talk a lot about Carson Beck. I love the quarterbacky stuff that he did. I love the ability to kind of skirt sacks and get away from him. The pressure to sack rate was really low in the past. It's not as much this year. He's trying to do more with his legs, but he's not really the athlete to do it. He had a really, really beautiful deep ball in the first drive of that game yesterday that was dropped. It was, angered me. But then just completely lost a linebacker in coverage and threw a horrific pick. He tried to look off a linebacker on the next drive and didn't look him off long enough, was too nonchalant on, and they were stacked up. Corner was playing off, and he had a little diamond release slant that was open, but because he didn't do a good enough job of just understanding, knowing that that was going to be open, he wanted to get his eyes there a little bit earlier and see it before he threw it, and he allowed the linebacker to come in, and it was almost another pick, and that would have been a pick six. So these are the decisions and these, like, quick little things that we wanted to see from Carson Beck again this year, because that's what we thought we were getting with him. Like you said, the floor way lower than we thought it would be with him. And that is why we are both absolutely slamming the table, drafting that Jalen Milroe is the better prospect.
Yeah. Like it's concerning with Beck. Like, it's very concerning. And again, there's a lot of football left and he plays the ACC or SEC. So there's still a lot of quality opponents for him to figure this thing out. But like back-to-back weeks where you look like,
Kentucky might have the best defense in the SEC.
That's true. Yeah.
Kentucky's defense is outrageous, but yeah.
Yeah.
Not good.
Mid tools and mid process, you're not going to get very far.
Nope.
So.
No, you're just Stetson Bennett.
Yeah.
But less athletic.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. And we want to be clear, like, we are not falling for the social media quarterback thing, like the big splashy play thing. We talked about that in the last episode, as kind of still out as we are on Cam Ward. And that's an even more intriguing situation because Ward has quite easily the more talented arm than Jalen Milroe does. It's not particularly close, but the down to down quarterback stuff that we talk about, that we covet so much, the eyes, the ability to make the correct decision when asked a different question post-snap than pre-snap. Mm-hmm. That's what you need to be able to do at the NFL level. You need to be able to get the ball out quickly. You need to know what the answers are. You need to study and have the answers to the test when the teacher throws you a curveball. Kirby Smart tried throwing a bunch of curveballs in this game, tried blitzing it. He had the answer every single time. So, kudos once again to Jalen Milroe playing probably the best game of his life against the toughest test that he will see all season. Kudos to you, young man.
Yeah, absolutely. And now Alabama is rightfully the number one team in the nation. So
yeah.
In our adapter draft where we said is Georgia, Ohio State, and Texas the only three teams, we're looking pretty dumb already on that. So
thanks, hey, Jalen.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Thanks, Carson Beck.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it, and again, like, even with Carson Beck, it just is what it is. We thought we were going to get a higher floor than what we are currently seeing with him. And like you said, he might turn it around. He might end up being, you know, that quintessential low ceiling, low-ish floor starter at the NFL level who goes in like the second round and is just like never really good. But that's kind of what we see from those second round guys. I mean, it's one of the reasons why we don't see a bunch of second round quarterbacks at the NFL level. They kind of stick away from it. But that's it. That's after draft for week 5, ladies and gentlemen. And honestly, this is some of the most fun I've had because
I love after draft episodes. I love
Me too. But that one specifically, getting to really dive into Jalen Milroe is a lot of fun for us because there is still a lot that you want to see from him moving forward. But we are seeing his ascension in real through time. Our very eyes in real time. And that is really cool to see.
Yeah, it is indeed.
And I think I saw Dane tweet out, that's quarterback one right there during the game, or quarterback one stuff right there. I can't get there yet. I can't draft that yet. But if we continue to see him,
maybe that's next week's after draft.
The SEC, we will see exactly what his ceiling might be in the NFL draft.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Oh, man, I'm excited. Again, we're to the point where we're getting to enough sample sizes for me to get my charts up and get my weighted on target percentages, like actual hard numbers to compare last year's class to the year after that. Again, I have to chart every throw to get these numbers. So it's not a quick process where I can just pull a PFF grade and plug it in. But I'm excited about that. This is my favorite part of the year, where we get to this midseason point and can really start finalizing some. I mean, not really finalizing, but
you're getting a big enough sample size for guys that you've been keeping an eye on to where you could really start to finalize grades here in the next couple of weeks once teams are, you know, squarely into conference play.
Right. Like Harold
Fannin Jr.
Yeah. He's already played his toughest opponents. Yeah. Maybe he'll play another P4 team in a bowl game, but he's already played his biggest games of the year. You could tell me that guy. I could tell you that guy is a second round. I'm going to give that guy a second round.
Yeah.
I could tell you that. So, but man, I love it. All right. Well, that's this Wednesday edition of the Daft or Draft on Draft podcast, Daft or Draft edition. Until next time, and we'll be back tomorrow building a prospect. I am Corey, and that is Dalton V. Miller.